Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 346, and we're in the midst of the census that Moses is taking here before they enter into the land, the second one. And we are in verse 34 of chapter 26. And let's continue here. And at the same time, let's understand why is it so important for God to have the census recorded there, and even twice, one for the first generation. And obviously many of them died. All of them, as a matter of fact, 20 and up, died in the wilderness, and now this is the second generation that is about to enter into the land. And the census is extremely important to know what tribe they come from, what family they come from, what clan they come from. And so when they enter into the land, this information will become very important in terms of the territory that they are going to receive. And having this information drilled into their minds and hearts very deeply, it became a part of their culture, so when they went to other lands, they took this knowledge with them that was a part of their heritage. And so to this very day, a lot of them still know their ancestry, and they know their clan, and they know their immediate family, and they have, you know, the different clans. When you go especially to places like Scotland, Ireland, you know, people know whether they come from this clan or that clan or the other one. And they have preserved this knowledge all this time because of this information that we read here. Every Sabbath day when they read the law, this information was in their mind. In other words, once a year when they read the entirety of the law, since they read it a portion every Sabbath, so once a year they'll get back to this information, and everybody will be reminded of where they came from, who their father was, what their clan was, and the name and things like that. And obviously as time went by, names changed, but the habit and the culture and the way of doing it remained, and that's how they remained, and that's how the children of Israel are still known. And until recent time, most everybody knew what family they came from. It's just when you come to the 20th century, and then obviously this next century after that, people came to the United States and integrated, and in the process forgot where they came from, even though some, because of their name, they still retained their identity. And so we'll continue from verse 34, where we read here. These are the families of Manasseh. This is the firstborn of Joseph, and he's mentioned first. And they that were numbered of them were 52,700. It was a very big tribe. It was quite a bit bigger than Ephraim. Verse 35, these are the sons of Ephraim, after their families, of Shutela, the family of Shutelaites, of Becher, the family of the Becherites, of Tahan, the family of the Tahanites, Tahanites that is. Tahan, that's the name of the clan at the time. And, you know, for us, a lot of people are reading it today who may be descendants of these very people, and these names, you know, may sound a little bit strange to them, but it was not to these people, and one of these days they're going to come back to life, and these names will still be there, and you're going to be speaking to these very people, and these names will mean an awful lot to them. As a matter of fact, for generations to come, these names were very important to them. When they look back, they realize who are the ones that came out of Egypt and entered into the land, and these names were very important, and you can imagine that for many, many generations, they still continue to be called by the names that you read here. So, when we look at it from that point of view, you know, things are different, and we have a different appreciation and a different perspective on it. Verse 36, and these are the sons of Shutela, of Aran, the family of the Aranites. And it's very interesting when you study the genealogy, you would notice that some names are mentioned in terms of the people themselves and then their sons, and others are not. In other words, some lines continue and God mentions them, and others he does not. And he did not mention about the sons of Tahanites, but he mentioned the sons of Shutela, of Aran, the family of the Aranites, one family in particular. There's always a reason for it, and nowadays, you know, a long time after that, obviously we don't see it, but in those days, those became very meaningful. When God mentioned a continuation of a line, obviously they had a special role in Israel. Verse 37, and these are the families of the sons of Ephraim, according to those that were numbered of them, 32,500. Manasseh was 52,000, quite a bit bigger, and Ephraim was smaller, being the younger. And these are the sons of Joseph after their families. So when you put the two together, they become a very big tribe. In other words, if you just consider Joseph instead of Ephraim and Manasseh, they become the biggest in Israel. But of course, every single one of them became a tribe, and so they're mentioned that way. Verse 38, the sons of Benjamin, after their families, of Bela, the family of the Belaites, of Ashbel, the family of the Ashbelites, of Ahiram, the family of the Ahiramites, of Shefufam, the family of the Shefufamim in Hebrew, and of Shufami, actually it's quite shorter in Hebrew, in English it's longer, because you've got all the ites at the end, and of Hufam, the family of the Hufamites, and the sons of Bela, so it's a continuation of one line here, Arad and Naaman, and the family of the Aradites, of Naaman, the family of the Naamites. So you notice that he picks up only one family here, and the continuation of this family, obviously this singular family, played a major role, more than the others, and so they are the ones that are mentioned. There's always a historic reason for it, and other reasons. 41, these are the sons of Benjamin after their families. So you notice he had many families, many clans. And they that were numbered, all of them, were 45,600. Benjamin was a bigger tribe than Ephraim. These are the sons of Dan after their families, of Shuham, the family of the Shuhamites. These are the families of Dan after their families. All the families of Shuhamites, according to those that were numbered of them, were 84,400. Though even though it's only one clan here of Dan that is mentioned, there aren't many like Benjamin or others. Look how big they were. There was 64,400, far bigger than Ephraim or Manasseh, and almost just as big as Judah, and as big as Zebulun. So it was a very prolific tribe. And the sons of Asher, after their families, of Imnah, the family of the Imnites, of Ishvi, the family of the Ishvites, of Beriah, the family of the Beriahites, of the sons of Beriah, of Hever, the family of the Heverites, and Hever was one of the forefathers of Abraham. From him came the name Hebrew, and so they obviously were using this name, Hebrew. The family of the Hebrites, of Malkiel, the family of the Malkielites. Malkiel means my God is king. And the name of the daughter of Asher was Sarah. So here's one son of Jacob, and the name of his sister is mentioned. Obviously there was a special reason for it. And verse 47, these are the families of the sons of Asher according to those that were numbered of them, 53,400, another big tribe. And Asher is today known as the people of Switzerland. And also, we know from historic records that they settled in the area a long time ago, in the area of Italy, in southern Italy, in the area of what is called Venice and Genoa and all those places. And in the Middle Ages, they were known to be the light of Europe. While Europe was going through the Dark Ages, this area was called the light of Europe. They were very prolific, very involved in culture and arts, and merchants, and merchant of Venice, and a lot of these things. Well, this were not Italians in the sense of Italians, the Gentiles. These were Israelites from the tribe of Asher, and they had also among them the tribe of Levi and Simeon that lived further down, further south from them. Verse 47. These are the families of the sons of Asher according to those that were numbered of them, 53,400. Again, another big tribe. And the sons of Naphtali, after their families, of Yahazel, the family of Yahazelite, of Guni, of the family of the Gunites. Some people talk about the Gunis. And you see to this very day among the Swedish people of Naphtali, yeah, the name Gunther or things like that, it's pretty much common. Came from this name. Of Jezer, the family of the Jezerite, of Shilem, the family of the Shilamites. These are the families of Naphtali, or Naphtali, that means wrestling, according to their families, and they that were numbered of them were 45,400. These are they that were numbered, so Naphtali is the last one to be mentioned here, and these are they that were numbered, all the children of Israel, 600,000 and 1,730. So these are only the men of war, from 20 and to 50, you know, that went out to war. And yet, a lot of people, as time went by, Israelites themselves have no faith, no knowledge, no understanding, blind and ignorant. They don't believe in this figure. They say, oh, no, that could be. Of course, some of them, it's not all of them. Skeptics, faithless. And they claim that there weren't that many of them. You know, there was some of them even claim that there were only about 600, you know, renegade runaway slaves. You see, that's how far they went from God, into total darkness. And I read the other day even one Orthodox rabbi discussing the issue of the Exodus, whether it ever happened. A lot of Jews today don't believe that it even happened. And Moses and the people of Israel being in Egypt and Sinai and this whole thing, you see, in the beginning of the nation of Israel as they entered into the land and the conquest by Joshua and the great kingdoms of David and Solomon. A lot of archaeologists, because they cannot find evidence, you see, a lot of people don't know where they put their watch, you know, this morning, and then they think that you can tell what happened 3,500 years ago, which is total foolishness, because there were shepherds, and shepherds don't carry anything with them that is left behind as an evidence. And when they came into the land, they just moved into homes and cities that the Canaanites built, so you couldn't see any evidence that they even came there. You see, and that's a foolishness of these archaeologists, and they're spreading that and have been doing it for the last decades. But nowadays it seems to be that some people are picking on it, and a lot of Israeli, because of that, lost faith in their God and lost faith in the Bible and lost faith in their heritage and all that, and then go along with that. The other day I was reading that even one, at least, maybe there are others, one Orthodox rabbi. Imagine an Orthodox rabbi. We're not talking about just an ordinary man, you know, among Israel that knows nothing. He says that anybody who believes that the children of Israel were 650,000, and mind you, that's only the men of war, must be a little crazy. That's how far they're departing from the faith. And it's very pathetic. Well, here is, every single one of them is named, by number. These people existed, they're alive in the sight of God, and one of these days they're going to be brought back to life, and they're going to confront their descendants. They're going to find out, you know, their descendants did not even believe that they even existed. Imagine that. And they're going to have a little talk with them. You see? In other words, the hearts of the children have been alienated from their own fathers. Their forefathers, their ancestors, are so far apart from them, they don't even believe that there was such a thing. That's how deceitful was the devil. That's how he managed to even make children believe that the prince never existed. That's in essence what we read, among other things, why God said, remember the law of Moses through the prophet Malachi. In other words, return to your core, where you came from, to the faith, to the truth, to the understanding of your own ancestors, you see, to the number of your ancestors, and so forth, all these things. Remember that law of Moses, which I gave to Moses, and return to that, and then he said he's going to send them Elijah the prophet, or somebody in the spirit of Elijah, in order to restore the heart of the fathers to the children, the heart of the children to the fathers. And this is one explanation of it too. The heart of the children is totally alienated from the heart of the fathers. They don't even believe that they even existed. That's how far they are. And so God said, unless you do it, unless that happens, unless they are being restored to the faith, well, there will be no reason for them to even exist. He's going to bring utter destruction on them. Imagine that when the son, you know, or a daughter say to their fathers, you don't even exist. That's how insane the people of Israel are today. And so we continue with verse 52, and the Lord spoken to Moses, saying, and to this the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of names. So the names were so important, extremely important. And here it is, these people came into the land and their names as the pass, you know, by Joshua, they had to give their names so he would know where to place them. And all these things were real. And here it is, their descendants down the road claim that they did not even exist. That's how foolish people are, how dark their mind is. Verse 54, to the more, notice here, principle by God, to the more you shall give the more inheritance, and to the fewer you shall give the less inheritance. How does God divide his riches among his children? Is it who you know, which one of you is more important? You see? If you are a CEO, so you get a huge salary, and if you're just the workers, you get peanuts. That's the way of the world, that Babylon. And we're so used to it that we think, well, that's right. You know, he works very hard and all that. He deserves more, much more. Or whatever it may be. God doesn't function like that. You don't go and sit at the table with your family and you look at your kid and say, well, you know, you're an intelligent kid, you know. You get three steaks and you get just a little piece here, you know, because you're not too smart, whatever it may be. Or you're an important kid in my sight and you are not and so forth. You see, it's a foreign to the nature of God, the society in which we are, this economy that we got so used to, and we are part of it, and we think that way too. What's wrong with being rich? What's wrong with being a millionaire? You work hard, you make a lot of money and all that. And never dawns on us. What does it mean for a person to become a millionaire? That means that many other poor people. You see? Where are you going to get the million from? You got to get it from people. And so you end up with the money, and they end up with the poverty. And oftentimes that's the way it works in this society. God doesn't want it that way. He's the Father. He's the Creator of heaven and earth. And He has all His children, and He wants all of them to have just the same. You see? Now, what you produce in your own land, which is just the same as the other one, that's a different story. But for somebody to accumulate and to have huge properties, real estate, lands and all that, that means that all the others are being disinherited. And that's the way the world functions. That's what the rich are all about nowadays, and that's what the poor are all about nowadays. You see, and a lot of us, you know, are not thinking straight because of that, and we think, well, we don't see anything wrong with the system. And God tells us, come out of Babylon. Everything about Babylon is totally foreign to me. It's demonic. It's devilish. Contrary to my nature and character. Now, that's what it says here. To the more, you shall give the more inheritance, and to the fewer, you shall give the less inheritance. There's no such a thing as, you know, the CEO gets everything or so much. Huge salaries they get, or the head of the company, or the head of the church, or the top leaders, whatever. And all the rest are the peons, you know, they get the peanuts. That's demonic. And a lot of people are so deeply into it, even religious leaders, are too blind to even understand that. That's what Jesus Christ was saying about those that came before him, and that's applicable to all those that came after him. All those that came before me, he said, are thieves and robbers. That's all they're after. You see? And you don't see that with Joshua, who entered into the land, and only after the land was conquered and all the tribes of Israel received their inheritance, then he went to the leaders, you see, that were under him, and said, well, you know, I need my portion too. And then he said, oh, well, you're Joshua, you're the great leader and all that. You get to get the best piece of the land in the land, and you got to get the biggest one, the nicest one and all that. No, it didn't work that way. If he didn't have a big family, he didn't get a big property. He just got enough for his family, and that's all he needed. That's God's system. We're so far from it, we don't even understand it anymore. That's why Christ sometimes had to tell his own disciples, you know not of what manner of spirit you are. And so this is what he says here, to the more, you give the more inheritance, just like with the manna. You know, God gave the manna. He's the one, the chef, you know, he gave them the food. And he told them, you gather according to the number in your family. You know, if you have bigger family, you need more. You have a little family, you don't need that much. You see, how many steaks can you eat? And that's the way it functions with God. And people don't understand it. And so he says, to the more you shall give the more inheritance, and to the fewer you shall give the less inheritance, to each one according to those that were numbered. And that was another reason for the census, to find out exactly how many they are. And nothing to do with their, you know, being important or being in high office or position or whatever it may be. It had absolutely nothing to do with that. It just had to go with the number in the family. If a person was blessed by God and has 10 children, you cannot say, well, you know, who cares about you? I'm an important person. I have only one kid, but so what? I'm going to get, you know, the biggest piece of land here and inheritance, whatever it may be, and you know, you just get a tiny little bit. And so, the big family lives in poverty. That's the world in which we are today. That's what God is going to totally blot it out and wipe it out from under heaven the way it is today, the whole system. And redivide the land among all nations of the earth according to their numbers. There is going to be a census taken. And based on the number in everybody's family, that's how the land will be divided. And everything belongs to God. And when people forget that, then they think, well, you know, I deserve it. I'm smarter. I can make more money. So I should have more. And who cares about the others? God says, no way. It doesn't work like that. And so that's what he said. According to the number, each shall be its inheritance. In other words, to each one, according to those that were numbered of it, shall its inheritance be given. For many years, we've experienced that even in the ministry. There were ministers that, you know, were blessed with many children. Nobody cared about it in headquarters. You see? They just said, well, you know, you're just a local elder or whatever it may be. Preaching elder, not too important. You're not, you know, an evangelist and things like that. That's the salary you get, and that's your problem. And some people, I've known personal cases, where actually they were selling furnitures to be able to feed the family. Nobody cared about that. That's the nature of man. It's demonic. A lot of us are so deeply into it, we do not even understand it, and they continue at it to this very day. You get all those organizations, and the people at the top get, you know, so much, and the peons at the bottom get little. And the thing that they are the people of God, pleasing in the sight of God. They may be people of God, but you know, a lot of people of God are just as evil as they can be. And this is what God is saying here. This is the law. That's what God says. You got to eat my flesh and drink my blood. That's his flesh and his blood. You know, you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. This is the commandments of God. People have no respect for it. And so we read here in verse 55. Notwithstanding, the land shall be divided by lot according to the names of the tribes of their fathers. They shall inherit. So the names and the numbers determine how much you get. According to the lot shall their inheritance be divided between the more and the fewer. So he's repeating it for, you know, just in case somebody was hard of hearing. And people are certainly hard of hearing, have ears, but they can't hear. They cannot hear the law. Why? Because contrary to their, you know, greedy nature. That's why Paul says, the carnal mind. See, that's the problem. There's a lot of carnality out there. The carnal mind is an enemy of God. They're not about to listen to God, to the Father, and His commandments. You see? They're not interested in that. They want to do their own thing. Carnal mind is an enemy of God. It is not subject to the law of God, and this is the law of God here. That should determine how we function in life. Of course, today everything is so mixed up. You know, how do you fix it now? You can't. You see, what happens today, a lot of people who get very rich, well, they decide, you know, the goodness of their heart, they're going to be philanthropists, that is, and begin to give some people money and give to the poor and donate to charities and things like that. But it's all peanuts in comparison to what they have. You see, one person has $100 billion and another person is just as poor as it can be. It's a lot of horrible criminal activities going around, and people think, well, that's right, and there's nothing wrong with that, that's legal, you know, I worked hard, you know, I built me a company, and of course in the process I gobble other companies, the competition destroys one another, and it's all a demonic system, and never dawns on them that that's what the economy of the United States and the whole world is all about. It's demonic in nature. The law of the jungle, they devour one another, they destroy one another. And many are unemployed because of that and thrown out, and people buy companies and, you know, and dismantle it and throw away the employees. Well, they don't care about them as long as they get rich. That's the system in which we are, and that's the reason why the Great Tribulation is coming upon all. And that's what you read about Babylon and all, you know, it's going to fall in 1 hour, and all those merchants that made so much money, you see, in the system are going to mourn and to sigh and to grieve, because they're going to lose everything they had. And God is going to repay everyone that functioned in this system. And that's what God demands from us and commands us. Come out of this Babylon, come out of this system, of the way of doing things, of the philosophy of it. And so he's repeating here again, according to the lot, verse 56, shall their inheritance be divided between the more and the fewer, all based on your need. That's the system of God. Doesn't mean it should be less. It does not mean, you know, that you can say, well, because I'm poor, I deserve more, and do nothing about it, and not willing to work hard, just be a couch potato, watch television, do whatever it may be, while somebody else is willing to wake up 5 o'clock in the morning, go to work, and work very hard, and, you know, and support his family in great honor, you see. Obviously, all those things also have to be taken into account. But initially, the way God meant for it is for everybody to be obedient to the law and to receive as much as they need based on the number in the family, and then also to be working hard. And from the piece of land that he receives, he can produce more, he can produce less. You see? But the land is divided equally, and the riches are divided equally. But then, of course, the law of God is not only that don't hoard to yourself, you know, don't take so much to yourself and all that, but also work hard. Labor. You see? 6 days you shall labor, God says. Not be lazy. So you have to see it both ways. But the system, unless it is a system of God, it would produce poor people and lazy people and so forth. And then you have an awful lot of iniquities because of that. And verse 57, we read, and these are they that were numbered of the Levites after their families, of Gershon, the family of the Gershonites, of Kohath, the family of the Kohathites, of Merari, the family of the Merarites. So there are three major families there of the Levites. And these are the families of Levi, the family of Livnites, the family of the Hebronites, the family of the Mahlites, the family of the Mushites, the family of the Korahites, where Korah came from. Kohath begat Amram. And Kohath was the son of Levi, and he begat Amram. And the name of Amram's wife was Yocheved, the daughter of Levi, that is from Levi, and who was born to Levi in Egypt. And she bore unto Amram Aaron and Moses and Miriam, their sister. So you're talking about 3-4 generations only from the time Jacob came into Egypt to the time Moses was born. And it's not 400 years. Some people, in their ignorance, they don't realize that the 400 years that God was talking about was from the days of Abraham. They were not that long in Egypt. They were about 200 plus years in Egypt. And then a lot of that was still in the days of Joseph, who lived to be 110, and then his brothers also. And until he died, and those and all of his brothers, there was no captivity for Israel. So the slavery period was roughly around 100 years. And the hard bondage, the real hard bondage that got worse later on, was even less than that. And verse 60, we read, and unto Aaron were born Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Itamar, these four sons. And Nadab and Abihu died. And when they died, when they offered strange fire before the Lord. In other words, a fire that was not holy, because God was not the one that sanctified it, because it was not from the fire that he himself kindled to begin with. And God was not about to respect anyone on the day, you know, don't respect him. Verse 62. And they that were numbered of them were 23,000. Every male from a month old and upward. Now mind you, if these two sons of Aaron survived and they continued to multiply in these 40 years, there would have been many more of them. You see? But there weren't as many. The priesthood was cut in half with the sin of these two potential progenitors of many, many, many people of the priesthood. And so, that's how many there were, 22,000. That is 23,000, and every male from a month old, mind you, among the Levites, they were counted from a month old, among the children of Israel, from 20 years old. And so, from a month old and upward, for they were not numbered among the children of Israel, because there was no inheritance giving them among the children of Israel. What does it mean? Are they going to be now in the poorhouse? Is it the system of God? No. God was going to take care of them. He's going to make every Israelite to a certain percentage, so everybody has just the same. You see? That's the system of God. Everybody has based on their needs. And if there was a Levitical family that or priesthood that had many children, they got more when they divided whatever they got from Israel. And that's the way it functioned. That's God's way. And all of them had to work hard also, and not just sit around and expect people to pay them. Verse 63, these are they that were numbered by Moses and Eleazar, the priest, who numbered the children of Israel in the plains of Joab. So, the priesthood was involved in the counting, because that's something that is very important to God. It's not only a civil matter, it's also a religious matter, spiritual matter. And they counted them who numbered the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. So this is right about before they are to enter into the land. Verse 64, but among these there was not a man of them that were numbered by Moses and Aaron the priest. And who numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. And there was not left a man of them save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, Yeshua, the son of Nun. It's Nun, it's not Nun. In English it says Nun. Nun, that was his name. And obviously, all the people that were from 20 and up died in the wilderness, so there was no need to count them. Chapter 27, we continue the story. And here we read about some of the names that we read before that were mentioned, and they were mentioned for this reason. As I said oftentimes earlier, whenever names are being mentioned and others are not, it's because there is a reason for it. They're going to be playing some kind of a role later on. And so here we see again with the daughters of Tzlophad that were mentioned earlier from the tribe of Manasseh in chapter 27. A problem arose and needed to be taken care of, and based on that, a new law was given to Israel, and it was to exist. As a matter of fact, that law is still to this very day. Even civil governments have recognized that. And so, chapter 27, verse 1, we read, then drew near the daughters of Tzlophad, the son of Hefer, the son of Gilad, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh. So from Manasseh to this people, there are only about four generations. And Manasseh was the son of Joseph, of the families of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. And these are the names of his daughters, Mahla, Noah, and Hoglah, and Milcah, and Tirzah. Tirzah became later on, in later history, the name of the capital of Israel before later on Omri, the father of Ahab, bought Mount Shomron and called it Samaria, and that became the capital. But Tirzah was the former capital of Israel. And here it is, it's in the land of Manasseh. Because this daughter also, whether it is related to this daughter, who knows? And that was her name, Tirzah. Verse 2. In other words, Tirzah means will want, or means wanted. Verse 2. And they stood before Moses, and before Eleazar the priest, and before all the princes, and all the congregation. Here it is, five daughters. Five women stand there before the top leadership, because that's the only place where it could have been taken care of. Obviously, nobody lower echelons could have taken care of that. So they ended up with the Supreme Court, so to speak, of Israel, and they brought the issue before them. It was a very serious matter. And they stood before Moses and before Eleazar the priest and before the princes of all in all the congregation at the door of the tent of meeting, saying, our father died in the wilderness, and he was not among the company of them that gathered themselves together against the Lord in the company of Korah. So they were not rebellious among all those Israelites. In other words, they didn't die because they've done something wrong. That is, their father, he didn't die because of that. He just got old and died. So he said, you know, but he died in his own sin. And he had no sons, and his own sin was obviously was the fact that, you know, all the other people from 20 and up, because they were not willing to go into the land, they all died. So that's the reason why he died. And many others died like that. So I'm sure this was not the only case. There were many others who, for whatever reason, didn't have sons, just had daughters. And verse 4, they said, why should the name, so that was the issue, it's not us, you see, why should the name of our father be done away from among his family because he had no son. So the issue was beyond just, you know, the rights of the daughters, you know, to some kind of inheritance, because after all, if they get married, you know, they get married to men, and the men will take care of them. But the issue is that a name was important to God, and that every name in Israel of a male should have a piece of land to pass on from generation to generation. So that's how they kept their genealogy and their heritage. And this was the important thing here. This was the issue, the name of the father. And he said, why should the name of our father be done from that is away from his, among his family, because he had no son? Give unto us a possession among the brethren of our father. You see? And that would be known as the land of so-and-so, their father. You see? And that's how it's been passed on from generation to generation, based on the man in the family. And it's not that he's the only one that inherited. Obviously, his daughters do too. But this was God's system. Things are being passed on from father to son. And verse 5, and Moses brought their case before the Lord. Now Moses is confronted with this issue. He didn't say, well, I'm Moses, I know it all, I'm going to make a decision, and that's why I like it. You see? No, that's not the way the men of God are. They don't do their own thing. They don't invent their own law. And when it says law of Moses, it doesn't mean that Moses invented it. You see, he got it directly from God, and he made it. He was very consistent at that. He made it very clear. That when you bring something that I myself do not know what to do about it, I'm going to take it to God. I'm not going to make my own mind. You know, the only way you can make a decision is based on the law of God. But when you don't know what to do with an issue, you see, where there is a precedence, you go to God himself. A lot of people have not learned to do it. And many people just do their own thing. They think they know it all. The ministry generally is the most guilty at that, the leaders of the land. They don't consult the law of God, the word of God, to see what is his mind concerning the matter. And so here, Moses gives us another example, and that's why it said about him, he was faithful in all of his house. Verse 6, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, now God is going to lay down the law, because he's the lawgiver, not Moses. The daughters of Tzlophad, speak right. You know, when you're right, you're right. It doesn't make any difference what you are. You know, with God, when it comes to righteousness, there is no difference between a man and a woman, a slave, or a master, whatever it may be. It has nothing to do with that. Right means right. And yet in the land, might means right. Importance means right. Everything else means right. You see? Now that's the difference between us and God. And this is what he's saying here. That's in essence what Paul is saying. You know, in Jesus Christ, there is neither bond, nor free, nor man, nor woman, nor slave, whatever it may be. You see? Righteousness is righteousness. A lot of people have not learned to do that. You don't say, well, you know, you're just a bunch of women. Get out of here. And what are you doing here? You know, how dare you even come and you see? That was not the issue there. And a lot of people in the process of time forget that. And even among the people of Israel, they began to look on women as less than animals sometimes. And that's totally contrary to the will of God. And to this very day, we have problems because of that. And there is a backlash now and then. That's not the first time with the feminism. That's been happening many times in the past because of abuse. You see? We should always remember what important is what is right. You see? Not who said it. You know, people come and tell you certain things. You know, and if you're in a haughty and arrogant and high office, you see, you know, the first thing that comes out of your mind is, whom do you think you are? It has nothing to do with that. Is it right or is it wrong? That's all that matters, and that's all that God cares about. It doesn't make any difference whether it is a man or a woman or whatever it may be. So even women need to learn that. Even when they are in the right, they should also ask, is it right in the sight of God? Not only is it right in my own sight. A lot of women today do their own thing because they think it's right. But is it right in the sight of God? Well, here is God makes it plain. I will determine what is right and what is wrong. It has nothing to do with a man or a woman or whatever it may be. And so it says, the daughters of Hath, speak right. You shall surely give them a possession of an inheritance among their father's brethren, and you shall cause the inheritance of their father to pass unto them. So now they are called by the name of their father. You see? But it's still, you know, in accordance to the law of God, that God is the head of man. You know, the guy in the letter on, we read, God is the head of Christ. Christ is the head of men, and man is the head of the woman. So the man still remains the head, but still he has to do what is right. And verse 8, and he shall speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a man die and have no son. So now God is going to go beyond that, beyond settling this issue here, a personal issue, and he's going to make an overall ruling, you see, create a precedence here for all to abide for the rest of Israel, for the rest of time. And he says, you shall speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a man die and have no son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughters. Because to God it doesn't make a difference whether it is a man or a woman. You see? Because this is right. And if he have no daughter, then he shall give his inheritance unto his brethren, that is his brothers. And if he have no brothers, then he shall give his inheritance unto his father's brothers. And if his father's... So notice how the division is going to be done here based on who is the closest of kin. And that's basically the way society works today. All, you know, the laws of the land, you see, that they're based on this very principle that here God has instituted, because five women, daughters of Manasseh, appeared on the scene and brought this issue. So you can see a very honorable mention here of five women that have brought about a law from God himself to this very day benefits an awful lot of people. That's a huge contribution by a woman. Five women in this case, five daughters, five sisters. And this is right. You see? And, you know, people need to learn to study the law of God with this in mind. What is right in the sight of God? And so he says, if you have no... if the father has no brothers, and if his father have no brothers, then he shall give his inheritance unto his kinsmen, that is next to him of his family, and he shall possess it. And it shall be unto the children of Israel a statute of judgment, as the Lord commanded Moses. You don't wake up one day and change the rules. And you say, oh, well, you women, you know, you really don't mean anything to society, you know. I'm not going to give it to you, you see. And then we're going to try to find somebody, who cares? We don't care who that person is to get it, but not you women. You see, God made it very plain. Of course, people did not necessarily always follow the law of God. You see, and that's where problems began in the society, and that's how women became oftentimes, in other words, they were forced into a precarious situation. Well, literally, many of them just had to go into prostitution just to survive, because people did not obey the law of God. And so they ended up in that horrible state. In the days of Jesus Christ, there were many harlots, many prostitutes, Israelites, Jews, children of the nation of Israel. How did they end up in that position? Well, because this law that God has instituted here, because five women brought it to his attention through Moses, was not being obeyed. And so they ended up in poverty, and to support themselves, they had to do whatever they could. And unfortunately, a lot of women today in many societies are doing just that. You see, that shows you how evil man can be when he abhors the law of God. That's the reason we have so many problems today with women's lib and feminism, and women, you know, are going the other way, to the other extreme of trying to exercise dominion and authority over men. That's in essence what God says. You know, this would be the backlash. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. That's contrary to God. They have it both ways, extremes. And that's not right. You see? And so we've been going back and forth because of that, because of disobedience to what is right. And so we read here that God said, this is a statute and a judgment. And it was given right before they were about to enter the land, 40 years later after Sinai. You know, God continues to give statutes and judgments to the end of time, and will continue to do so in the millennium, and all become a part of the law of God, of the Torah. Verse 12, and the Lord said unto Moses, get thee up into this mountain of Abarim, and behold, the land which I have given unto the children of Israel, and when you have seen it, you also shall be gathered unto your people. In other words, that's about time, you know, for you to go and just quit. You're going to die now. So God was going to determine the time of death. Now that's basically the same thing for all of us. When God determines the time, we go. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. Again, this is Mordecai Joseph, greeting soul of God's people. Until next time.